All right. My father was a 1937 graduate of Virginia Military Institute, known as VMI. He went on active duty for 6 months, but was sent home after 6 months because we had an army about the size of Portugal's or Romania's. We didn't need any more officers. He was called back in 1939 for the Louisiana maneuvers, which were war games that were won by a dashing colonel named George Patton. Now, George Patton was independently wealthy, and he got $1 a year for his services. But he told his tanks, which ran on gasoline, that if they needed fuel, just to pull up to any filling station, fill up, and he'd cover the tab. So that's how he won the games. Now, later on, after Louisiana maneuvers, they went to Fort Benning, and from Fort Benning, they went to Camp Gordon. Now, he was an artilleryman, and he started out at VMI with 75-millimeter cannon left over from the First World War. They went to the 105-millimeter, and his guns, which he had on D-Day, were 155-millimeter howitzers. Now, he had a company of men, about 200 people, and in that company, he had 4 guns, each of which was commanded by a second lieutenant. His executive officer was a first lieutenant. Now, they came ashore on D-Day about noon, but there greeting him was the deputy commander of the 4th Division, the oldest man on D-Day, Teddy Roosevelt, Jr., the son of the president. Now, he'd had a distinguished career. He had been wounded in World War I. He came back in 1919, formed the American Legion, which is 100 years old today. He was also president of American Express. He had been governor of the Philippines and governor of Puerto Rico. But when his cousin Franklin came in after the election and after he replaced Hoover, Teddy found himself without a job. But he had many different interests. He was, like his father, an explorer, a hunter, a sportsman and all. So he had no problems with occupying himself. But he did go back in the Army once Japan attacked us. And he served in Sicily, North Africa, and eventually was at Normandy on D-Day. He, being the oldest person on D-Day, was the only half of the only father-son combo on D-Day. His son, Quentin II, was at Omaha Beach, and Teddy was at Utah Beach. Now, my father said that as he came ashore with his towed 155-millimeter cannon, greeting him was Teddy Roosevelt, waving his cane, directing traffic, and he had a bottle of Calvados in his other hand. And they set up on a farm in Normandy at St. Martin de Verreville, which is near Saint Mary Glees, but not proximate. And they began shelling the Germans with the 155. Now, they stayed there until they broke through the hedgerows later in end of July, and then were able to liberate Paris in August of 1944. And he was not only there on D-Day participating, but he commanded his company or section of 200 men for 11 months of continual combat. And he got wounded in October of 1944 in France. We were very fortunate that his shrapnel wound to his right thigh missed his femoral artery by a couple of inches. If it had hit his femoral artery, he would have bled to death on the battlefield. But he went to the battalion aid station, and guess who was there? A fellow classmate from VMI who was a doctor during World War II, and so he tended my father's wounds. In those days, they had sulfur and gauze. That's about all they had for wounds. But he sent him to a hospital in Paris. And there he spent 6 weeks with clean sheets and hot food. And He cabled my mother that he had been wounded, but not to worry, it was not serious, and that he would get out of the hospital. He got out of the hospital in time for the Battle of the Bulge, because, as you remember, the Third Army was racing to relieve the embattled soldiers in Bastogne. So he went up and joined that group in the relief, and he stayed in battle until the following May of 1945, when the armistice was declared, and he did come home. Now, I did not meet my father, who turned out to be my best friend in life, until I was 15 months old. But if he had not returned home, I would not have known my second best friend, my brother Jack, and my third best friend, my brother Hugh. And, well, let's see, Jack is second, Hugh is third, Will is, well, anyway, I've got five brothers, and they all became my best friends, and we're still all close together. Now, some of the information that we retrieved for Tom Eastman at the Conway Daily Sun is based on information that we got from our oldest friends from D-Day. My father got a widowed lady and her two teenage daughters out of the home and got them to safety. And then their home later went up in flames. We're unsure if my father blew it away or if a German set fire to it. But anyway, those people there on D-Day have recommended to us that we read their description of what happened. And I recently got the letter sent to the Conway Daily Sun so that you can see what it was like on the from the side of the French people. Now, over the years, I've gone to Normandy numerous times. The lady, Genevieve, one of the teenage daughters, later married her first cousin, Raymond Lamaison. Now, in Normandy, if you marry your first cousin, you have to get permission of the bishop. Now, everyone knew, since they grew up playing together, and perhaps playing with each other, that they would get married, and they did, and they had two daughters. And those two daughters met us 2 years ago when we went down to visit, and they served us a typical Norman meal. And the lady, Genevieve, who was a teenager then, is now 86. I was 86 at the time. I guess she's 88 now. But she served, and her two daughters are Veronique and Katrina. They each have a husband whose name is Michelle. So with all those people and my daughter and my granddaughter, we had a lovely Norman meal. And over the years, Raymond Lamaison and the other members of his family took us on numerous tours of the Normandy beaches. And we've been to the cemetery. We've seen where Teddy Roosevelt Jr. is buried, and where they brought his son, Quentin, who'd been killed in World War I, and buried him beside his father. You know, in the if you read the descriptions of how it felt to be occupied by the hated Germans, you will come to understand that war may be the second worst calamity to befall mankind, exceeded only by defeat in war. So that period of time, June the 6th, 1944, if our country and its republic endure for 1,000 years, perhaps men will say this was their finest hour. And there's never been an invasion like that before, and there probably never will be one.
So what made you decide to do The Longest Day as a showing at the Conway Public Library?
Well, for the simple reason, first of all, those who are readers will have read Cornelius Ryan's book by the same name, The Longest Day. They later would get interested, and they would watch, they would read his book, Bridge Too Far, about the bridges seized over the Rhine and Montgomery's plan to end the war by Christmas. Both of those, Cornelius Ryan's books, have been made into quite good movies. The Longest Day is in black and white. There's a whole host of German, French, American, British actors that are in that. And I think for those who don't want to sit on the couch and read on a rainy day, maybe going to the movies would be a good substitute.
Do you have any final thoughts that you want to throw in there?
Well, I think when you watch the movie, you need to see, pay particular attention to several people. One is Raymond Barton, who was the Major General commanding the 4th Division. He was a graduate of West Point, class of 1912. That's the year that the stars fell on the graduates from 1912 because they all became generals. He later settled in my hometown, and he and my father were great friends, and I met him as, you know, growing up and all. Most of the men in the 4th Division settled around my hometown of Augusta, Georgia. So growing up, I could listen to the stories of people who actually were there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Gene.
No problem.